Glad you're here. If you're new or back, I want to especially welcome you. You've come at a great time. Today we're starting a new series on Luke, and I've called this series Let's Roll, and I'll kind of tell you why in a minute. Back in June, we started what's really going to be a marvelous adventure, and that's going through the longest book in the New Testament. Luke wrote more than anybody else. We often think of Paul, but Luke contributed more. And back in June, we walked through a series of messages we called the early years. And we looked at basically Jesus' conception up through his teenage years. And starting today and for the next several weeks, we'll look at from about when he was 30 years old through the first several months of his beginning of his public ministry. And today I really just want to set that up for you. Now, I've called this series Let's Roll for what might seem like an odd reason, I think, until I explain it to you. Most of you will remember that back several years ago on September 11th, there were four different planes that were hijacked. And two of those were demolished into the World Trade Center. One smashed into the Pentagon. And a fourth had a very different fate. Do you remember what happened to it? Crashed down out in a field, out in the middle of nowhere. I don't know if you heard the backstory to why that happened. Basically, there was a group of passengers on that plane who got word that something a lot bigger than just one plane being hijacked was going on. And they knew that there was other planes that had smashed into things, and they figured they were on the way to the same fate. And so passengers began using cell phones and the air phones, you know, the $50 minute phones, to call families and friends and basically say goodbye because they figured they're not going to live through this. One of those guys was a guy named Todd Beamer, and he tried to call his pregnant wife and couldn't reach her. And so he called the operator and gave her a message to pass on. And as he was getting off the phone with her, she heard him say, "Let's roll," and then hung up the phone. And these passengers stormed the front of the plane, and no one knows exactly what happened, but they caused the plane to crash. And apparently that's what they set out to do, because they knew they were going to die, but they didn't want anybody else to go with it. In essence, that's what Jesus does in Luke 3 and 4. He knows exactly what's going to happen to him. He knows how the story's. He knows he's going to end up on the cross, but he marches right forward into. And
isn't she great? It's not working. Is that better? Do you need me to start over? No. You didn't bring a lunch pail? All right. Sorry about that. We'll go back and cover some more of that in a minute. But from the outset, we see here in Luke
a couple things that I want to point out to you. Luke wrote this book to a guy named Theophilus, and Theophilus was probably a wealthy Greek or Roman high-up official. And Luke is a doctor. We know that from another book of the Bible. And probably what happened is Theophilus paid Luke to, in essence, set his medical practice aside and go on an investigative journey to discover what really happened with this figure, Jesus Christ. And so Luke traveled around for years, and he read everything that had been written. He heard all the stories. He talked to all the eyewitnesses he could find in order to learn everything he could about Jesus Christ. And then he sat down to write Luke. So that's where this came from. And today, I just want to set up the book again and sort of take a different angle at it than we took back in June. And then next week, we'll start in Luke chapter 3. So all I really want to talk about is why Luke wrote to Theophilus. Look again at verse 4. Why Luke wrote to Theophilus. It says that you may have certainty concerning the things that you've been taught. So Luke wrote because he wanted this man named Theophilus to know the truth. And all I want to talk about today is five words. That you may have certainty. That you may have certainty. The Bible, and especially Luke, is going to make a staggering claim. And that's really two things. Truth exists, and you can know it. Truth exists, and you can know it. Now, I'm going to kind of warn you ahead of time or challenge you. If you're used to coming to church and kind of checking out, then this will be a real snoozer for you. I want to ask you to really see if you can jump in and think hard with me about something today. I want to give you a little bit of peel back some of the layer of the environment we live in and expose some of the philosophy that's really impacted how we look at truth. And then we'll jump into Luke 3 next week. The predominant viewpoint in America that surrounds us today is that truth doesn't exist. It's that there are no absolute truths. Truth is relative. What is right for you isn't necessarily what's right for me. Now, we've all heard that, right? And I would argue that you've been more impacted by it than you probably could have any way of realizing. It's like telling a fish he's in water. He doesn't know any different. There's no other way to really describe it. Truth is relative to the individual and the culture, we're told. Truth is merely personal opinion about good or bad, right or wrong, nothing more. And above all, you have no room to tell me what's right, and I have no room to tell you what's right. And many believe that this forms the ultimate basis for kindness, that that's the most kind and loving thing we could do, is allow each other to think whatever's truth, is right. Did you follow that? All right, it's going to get worse, so hang with me. The idea that morality is relative, so let's take it into the realm of spiritual truth. The idea that morality is relative is based on the belief that truth in the spiritual realm is totally different than truth in every other part of life. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean. Imagine that on Monday you take a science test and you fail it, all right? You bomb it. So Wednesday you go to class and you get your test back and you wait to talk to the teacher. And you go up to him and you say things like, well, I just don't believe that gravity exists. And from my experience, water doesn't really freeze at 32 degrees. And, you know, I think all that is just really your idea. And come on, the craziest thing I've ever heard is the earth is moving. The earth isn't moving. Everybody knows that. Now, what's your teacher going to say? Going to say you're a moron, right? Okay, so we understand that in certain environments, we accept the idea that truth exists. But when we transfer that over to spiritual truth or to the Bible, we often throw that idea out the window. And I want to show you how crazy that is. All right? And then let me do it this way. Think about this. Is there anyone in the world right now doing something that you believe they must stop doing, regardless of what they personally think about it? Is there anywhere in the world that somebody's doing something that you believe is wrong? Just flat wrong. Now, some of you, you won't say it out loud, but you think no, because that's what we've been indoctrinated by. And let me tell you, when I went to college, I got immersed in this stuff. And I got all kinds of big words thrown at me that I'd never heard of, and it really screwed me up. So I can feel for those that you, of you that would say no. But most of us here probably would say yes. Yes, there's somewhere somebody's doing something that's wrong. Somewhere right now, there's an innocent kid that's being sexually abused. Right now. Somewhere right now, there's some old lady that has got her house robbed. Somebody's knocked her to the floor, and they're taking what few things she has left in the world. Somewhere right now, as we're sitting here, there's an innocent woman being raped. Now, most of us would say all three of those things are wrong. But my question for you is, if truth is relative, if there are no absolutes, then by what basis do we say any of those things are wrong? If every one of us determines truth from error, right from wrong, then how can we say those things are wrong? You can't. If you're going to be consistent, you can't. Now, let's take a slightly different angle on this. Often what happens in discussions about this is people put spiritual truth in a category different than any other kind of discussion. And we require way more proof, quote unquote, for Christianity than we do for anything else. We give it a standard that's different than any other kind of truth. Now, I wrote this out carefully. I want to encourage you to listen carefully. We either unknowingly or arrogantly claim to hold an absolute vantage point from which we say that no spiritual system of thought can be correct for everybody without realizing that that's a statement of faith. Okay? We've got to learn to doubt our doubts and work through them to find evidence. And over again, what Luke is going to do is he's going to say, I have evidence for you, and I want to present this evidence to you. And doubt your doubt, Theophilus, so that you can get to the truth. That's what he's going to say. Luke claims that the information he's going to share can be held with absolute certainty. Yet, the climate we find ourselves in tells us that this is impossible. Right? That's what it tells us. The first way to really helping yourself through this is to recognize that that's what we're taught, that that's what people think. Now, let me use an illustration to try and make this a little less abstract. People say that no one religion can know the fullness of spiritual truth, and that those like Luke who claim they can are just arrogant bigots, right? So let me give you an illustration. Diane, I'm going to use this handheld. There's a parable called the parable of the blind men and the elephant. All right, you may have heard of this. This is often used to defend the view I just shared with you. So imagine with me there's a big old elephant in here. Okay? I would ask for volunteers, but that would just not be nice. Okay? So we got a big elephant and four blind men. Okay? And somebody comes along and places them strategically at different points around the elephant. Okay? You with me? All right. So the first blind man, he is... He's over on the snout, all right? So he touches the snout of the elephant, and he says, well, an elephant's like a snake. It's long, and it kind of feels scaly, all right? So then the next guy, he's over at one of the feet, the legs, and he's rubbing the leg, and he says, what are you, a moron? This elephant's not like a snake. It's like a tree trunk. I mean, it's huge. All right? Then the third guy, he's over on the belly, the side of the elephant. And he's touching the side of the elephant. He's saying, what are you guys, blind? The elephant's like a wall. I mean, it's like a huge wall. I can't even reach the top. And then the last guy, he's got the tail in his hand. All right? The elephant's kind of hairy, and my gosh, it's humid. It's just hairy. All right. So, some of you will get that later. Now, here's where they go with this. All right? Here's what they say. No one system of truth, no one religious thought can be correct. They're each getting part of it, but none of them are getting all of it. So they're all wrong. That's the way that illustration's used. Are you with me? Okay. What's the problem with this? The problem with it is this. The only way the illustration works, the only way the parable makes any sense, is if you are somehow able to come above all the blind men and see the entire elephant. That's the only way it works. Now, do you see the problem? The moment somebody claims there is no absolute truth, all truth is relative. They are claiming the very thing they say can't be known. They are claiming to have an ultimate vantage point from which they can see that everything is wrong. So it's logically impossible. Now, I'm not even bringing up the fact that I'm a Christian, and so I have problems with this from a spiritual truth perspective. I'm just talking common sense. I'm talking logical consistency. You cannot claim to hold some superior knowledge if the superior knowledge doesn't exist, right? All right. Some of you, one of your eyes got bigger and the other got smaller. All right? Now, the whole thing, this whole idea is riddled with holes, riddled with it. But we're so used to it that it's hard to know it. It's hard to realize it. It's crazy. It's just sexy. And that's why it's so powerful. Because it appears to give tolerance and kindness and generosity and latitude to all of us, when in reality it does not do that. The claim that absolute truth doesn't exist and everything is relative is in fact a claim to ultimate truth. It is a statement of faith. Just like if some of you believe in God and follow the Bible, that is a statement of faith. There is no difference on a philosophical level. Now, besides all the logical consistency problems I have with this, imagine a world where that's actually true, where in the realms of morality, everyone determines right from wrong. There is no moral compass. Imagine what that would be like. Imagine living somewhere where that was actually bought into. Now, as I've talked with people over the years, and frankly, I don't like preaching this. This is much better sitting one-on-one, having a cup of coffee, talking, because I don't mean to belittle it. It's much better in person, one-on-one. But I don't know how we can dive into Luke without having this conversation, because Luke is going to tell us over and over and over, here's the truth. And if we hear something different when he says that, we're going to miss out on what he's trying to tell us. So I've had this conversation with tons of people. And only in two times have I ever been pressed so far that I had to really try and make somebody mad to see if they actually believe this stuff. And I can't remember if I've told you these. I don't think I have. One time, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was in Taiwan. On a mission trip. And I loved it. If you've never been there, you ought to go. It's an amazing place. But all we did was walk around and hand out Bibles and talk to people. That was it. I found the people to be extremely warm, welcoming, friendly, had a great time. And my favorite personal place to go was, there's two very famous temples in Taipei that have been there for years and years and years and years. And if you go in as a white person into a Taiwanese temple, you kind of stand out. So I would go in there and just stand around, and invariably within 5 or 6 minutes, somebody would come over. They'd start talking and sharing. You'd ask questions, what's this about? And next thing you know, it's been 2 hours, and you've had a great conversation. And so I spent 10 or 12 days doing this, day after day after day after day. And one of those days I met a guy, I don't remember his name, but he lived in L.A., but every year he flew over to go to this temple and to see his mother. He was Taiwanese. And we got in this whole conversation about truth and is there truth, is there absolute truth? Because he was telling me, I don't really know if this stuff is true. I'm not sure I believe it, but it's just what we do. Now, that seemed a little odd to me, to fly that far to go to the temple every year to do something you don't know if it's real. So I perceived that to be maybe he was a little open. So we talked through that and pursued it together. And he just kept telling me over and over and over, there is no truth. There is no absolute. And during the course of the conversation, we'd gotten to know each other, and I'd learned he had a family and had a couple kids. So some of you, this will make you irritated with me or uncomfortable. But I said to the guy, so you're telling me if a man broke into your house and raped your 12-year-old daughter and left, that that's not wrong, that there's nothing inherently evil about that. And this man looked me straight in the eyes and said, no. He said, if that's what that man decided to do, then that was right for him. Now, that kind of puts a little horror in us, doesn't it? But that's exactly what somebody that follows this through consistently ends up in. Now, I had a very similar conversation with somebody else. Maybe 2 years ago, I was on a plane headed back from a conference, going back to Oklahoma, and I met a gal in line at Southwest. Just for a moment, why do they do that? Why don't they give us seats? All right, so I'm in line with the seat. She's got one number, I got the other. We end up talking, and I kind of thought she was open as well, and so I ended up sitting with her and talking. She had been out to L.A. to go to a Healing Angels conference. So I got all these questions for her about what in the world a healing angel is, and it was great. Learned a lot and discovered she was from not very many miles from where I lived. She had the same system of beliefs, same thoughts. I learned she had a daughter. I asked her the exact same question. And she looked at me and said, now, because I'm her mother, I would do the motherly things you're supposed to do. But inside, I'd be thinking, if that's what that guy wanted, that's the way it's meant to be. That's the way the universe is. You decide what you want. I decide what I want. Now, I just find as a father of a daughter, I'm not even speaking religiously. As the father of a daughter, I cannot imagine thinking that. But when we throw truth out and we say morality doesn't exist and there is no moral compass, then, friends, that's where you end up. That's where you end up. Now, Luke is going to tell us over and over and over that truth exists. And the Bible is going to tell us truth exists. A couple of thoughts specifically on truth. Truth is something you can come to know. It is something you can come to know, despite what we're being told. And it hasn't always been this way. The predominance of this worldview that exists now, this is a new thing, relatively speaking. And it really came into vogue through arts. It started with modern art painting that moved from the concrete to the abstract, and then it traveled on down through to modern current thinking among all of us. That's where it came from. Now, truth is something you can know. In John 17:17, it says this, sanctify them in truth. Your word is truth. The truth about God are the facts about who he is, what Jesus accomplished at the cross, what can be found through him. And those are the kind of things we're going to look at. The truth is truth because God is always truthful. It's just part of who he is. It's a part of his makeup. But truth is more than something you can know. It's also someone you can know. Truth is someone you can come to know. Truth isn't just this personal, impersonal concept that we can sit around and argue about. It's actually a person that you can come to know. John 14:6 says this. Jesus said, I am the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him, and you have seen him. So knowing the truth isn't ultimately about learning a bunch of facts and getting a big head and acting like we're smarter than everybody else. We're not. We need the truth revealed to us just like everybody else does. And that's what God wants to do. Ultimately, the truth is about seeing and enjoying a real relationship with a real person, the one who's truth itself, Jesus Christ. Jesus also said this, So Jesus said to the Jews who believed in him, this is John 8, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. And you will know what? And the truth will what? Friends, you can know the truth. Truth exists and it's knowable. Some of you here today believe that and have experienced that, and some of you don't. And I'm thrilled that you're here if you don't. Keep at this journey as we're going through Luke. Study it for yourself. Get with other friends and read through it together and pray. And give it time and seek out answers. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Doubt your doubts. Figure out why you have doubts and seek answers to those questions that you have. Notice that in this verse, let me read it again, because this is real important. If you abide in my word, you're truly my disciples. You'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Notice there's a connection here between people who abide in Jesus' word and people who believe it and live in freedom. Abiding in Jesus' word means that you take it in, you believe it, and you remain in it. Not perfectly. None of us are going to do that perfectly. But as the general course and direction of our lives, we're remaining in the truth. When we do that, then God says we'll come to know it more and more. And there's multiple ways in the original language of the New Testament that you can know something. One is that you can know it here, oida. You can know it by knowledge through study. Another is gnosko. You can know it by experience. And that's what this word is. You can experience the truth because you'll experience a person. That person is Jesus Christ. And he'll set you free. Now, I don't know exactly what you need to be set free of, but all of us need to be set free. There are things that enslave all of us, all along a spectrum. And they can be from things that are absolutely inherently evil to things that are inherently good. But we just let them overcome us and take over our lives. But there is a God who is the truth, and he wants you to be free. That's what he wants for you. He doesn't want you to live in this vague, abstract idea that you're in charge and you can decide everything, and yet you carry a lot of junk. It just doesn't work, friends. So wherever you are today, I would invite you to ask God to help you know the truth in a deeper way. And as we journey through Luke, starting next week in Luke 3, as we look at Jesus' very first moments of his public ministry, the ministry that changed the direction of the world, that the world has never been the same. I want to pray and hope that you'll come with an open mind and heart to what God might say to you. And you just might become convinced that there is truth, and it is knowable, and that there's a God that loves you very much. Let's pray. I want to ask you, if you're just with your head bowed and eyes closed, if you are wrestling with this idea of truth and does it exist and can I know it and I have doubts, or if you already believe there's some truth for the most part, but you're just battling with something that you need to be set free from. Just slip your hand up and let me pray for you. Okay, thanks. God, I thank you for these folks. I thank you for everybody that's here today. What a joy it is to come together, to seek you, to learn about you, to see friends, to worship. God, I pray specifically for those who've just lifted up their hand. I'm sure that they range from people who are really battling and struggling and wrestling with, is there knowable, confident, I can be assured of this truth? To those that in their mind have said yes, but their hearts are struggling saying no because there's something that they're not yet free from. In all of these cases, God, I want to ask you, the God of all truth, to make yourself known, to reveal yourself in a powerful way to each one of them. I want to pray that they would confess sin where it exists, that they would pray for open minds and hearts. God, that you would peel back the layer of lies that exist all around us about this idea of no absolutes. Help us to see the universe for what it really is. It's a place that you've created. Yes, there's questions. Yes, there's some things we'll never know. But there's an awful lot that you have told us. There's an awful lot that the world inherently communicates because you've made it that way. God, I want to pray that every person here would come to know the truth, and the truth would set them free. It's in Jesus' powerful and truthful name I pray. Amen.